Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Cafe Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Hi, Mark.
Morning, Francis.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. The world is going to become a better place.
Yeah.
And we're going to help it.
Okay.
Today.
Well.
Today. It's our job to make the world a better place.
Later we have.
It's our job every day. How's that?
What did you have for breakfast this morning? later we have.
Probably some genetically modified corn syrup.
Later we have a representative coming on from an organization called the Seeds of Change, which it's an interesting organization. We'll leave that to the latter part of the show. But I want to cover an article that obviously I believe it was reported on the AP, and it's entitled "Activists Want Junk Food Out of Schools." I'll have to check whether it's with AP or not. I think it was. Dateline Washington. Evidently, there's a new ban proposed in Congress to get junk food out of schools. Nutrition activists have been trying since 1994 to get soft drinks and junk food out of the reach of kids who may find snacks and soda for sale in their cafeteria, vending machines, and school stores.
And a lot of states are already acting on this.
But with the help of beverage and the snack food lobby, opponents have blocked the efforts because it's very important that our children have soda. This time, supporters had hoped that bipartisan backing for a school junk food bill, coupled with the new awareness of the nation's skyrocketing obesity and diabetes rates, will make 2006 the year efforts to boot products like Coca-Cola become the real thing. The bill faces an uphill battle given the opposition of beverage and snack food trade groups, which obviously are in, you know, out there fighting for our children's rights to have soda and candy. They say the industry's voluntary guidelines for limiting sales in schools make the legislation unnecessary. Ready for this? Here's the quote. I love listening to these guys because they so have no leg to stand on that they're fighting for the rights of children to have choice to eat candy all day.
I also want to make clear, if you want to send your kid to school with Twinkies and Charleston Chews and whatever the candy of the day is,
great.
Go ahead.
Right.
Go ahead. We're not, Francis and I are not proponents of taking away your choice to feed your kid whatever you want to.
Right. But we are proponents of, what the industry is saying is, well, why should a 9-year-old not have the choice to eat whatever they want? You know what? 9-year-olds shouldn't have the choice to eat whatever they want.
Because they're nine.
And if you as a parent want to send your kid with one candy bar or two candy bars, or you want to feed your kid all candy bars all the time, that's great. But the parent who wants to say, listen, you get to have one Twinkie a day, and
right,
that's what you get. And then when you come home from school, maybe you get another snack. If they send their kid to school with $3 worth of lunch money, what that kid can buy six candy bars instead of lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's in the schools, you know, in loco parentis, the schools should be a safe place where you send your kids and it is structured and controlled. 9-year-olds do not have the same freedom of choice as adults. So let's listen to what this toady, Lisa Kadick, who is an industry hack.
We haven't given out a toady in so long.
Yeah, toady awards are what we give out to the industry toadies. Here's one. The industry's not going to support a bill that's not showing results, said Lisa Kadick, a consultant to the food and beverage industry, adding that the emphasis should be on getting kids to exercise. A student only needs... Yes, we should get our kids to exercise more.
Right.
But you don't put a big, flashy bar of candy in front of a kid and expect that... And let them get as much as they want. It's both sides of the coin.
Why do we only have to attack one thing at a time? Why is it that's the way it should be?
Here's more from the toadies. Snack and beverage groups say that such efforts send the wrong message to the nation's young people, without tackling the root cause of obesity and health problems, an increasingly sedentary lifestyle that discourages regular exercise. Okay, you want a root cause? How about the 64-ounce big gulp of sugar and corn syrup? No, not sugar. You wouldn't even give them sugar. You give them corn syrup.
Well, and I love the vicious cycle that they've set up. We get our kids to sit down in front of the TV and watch television all day, where we advertise to them junk food and soda and
SpongeBob candy and whatever else is on the TV during the shows that we the educational programs that we put on for them, and then they go and have those sodas and drink them and eat them in front of the TV while they're watching the next program. It's just a terrible, vicious cycle.
And then the industry hacks who are advertising to those children and getting
rich. They're doing it on purpose. They're choosing to do this because it's successful, because marketing to children is easy. It's easy to market to a child.
And let me put this paradigm out there. Any other place in society where an adult tried to entice a child into a business transaction, we would think that's kind of creepy, right?
It's against the law.
Right, but when an adult advertising tries to entice that child to drink 64 ounces of soda, and you know what? I was in high school when the Big Gulps first came out, and the Big Gulps then aren't as big as the Big Gulps now. Mm-hmm. There were no 96-ouncers back then. But it was a thing. When you were a guy, you're like, oh, I can do the whole thing by myself.
Drink them.
I can drink. And it was like a manly thing, the more you could drink. And it was really bad for us. Hold on a second. And where did that come from? That came from the industry. Here's more nonsense from this Caddick woman, who's an industry apologist. Here's her take on it. Food has been around forever, said Caddick, the industry consultant, but the change in the activity is what's most dramatic to me. It's easier to pick on food because it's visible and tangible. Okay, 96-ounce sodas, candy machines in the school that sell huge, awful sodas that are bad for people, and how much soda kids have today, yes, food has been around forever. I put it to you, Ms. Caddick, that what you sell is barely food.
And again, I'm not even going to bash the soda industry for producing soda. I understand, you know, people drink soda. It's okay. It's their choice. They can drink soda if they want. But you can't put it in my kid's school when we know that it's bad.
Industry representatives also say that total bans are ill-advised. It's not a total ban on your life. It's a ban on letting a 6-year-old, it's a ban on letting a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old have total access to junk food. It's not a total ban. It's not a saying that you can't have candy when your parents want you to have candy. It's a ban on you selling directly to my kids without my ability to stop it.
When I'm not there and when I don't want you to.
Industry representatives also say total bans are ill-advised because even so-called junk food consumed in moderation can be part of a nutritious and healthy diet. And yes, there's room in that mix for soft drinks, the American Beverage Association website says. No, soft drinks are not part of a healthy diet. If you have a mostly healthy diet, soft drinks once in a while as a diversion can be the exception to a healthy diet. You don't have to be all healthy all the time, but 9-year-olds don't make that decision on their own. That's for adults to make, and adults can stand up to their kids, and school administrators should stand up to the kids and say, your children, you will not have unfettered access to soda all day long.
And we've talked about this on the show a number of times as this issue has come up since we started the show. This may cost us a little bit more. You know what? We can't fund the baseball team by selling candy in the store, or the student council trip, or the ski trip by selling soda in the vending machine. But that's okay.
Here's one more dodge by these industry toadies. Ready? The Beverage Association last year adopted voluntary guidelines in part to preempt tougher legislation. The guidelines ban soft drinks in elementary schools. Good. And limit them to 50% of drink offerings in high schools. So, in other words, they take their soda machine, and it's half carrot juice and half all the Pepsi and other stuff.
No, it's going to be half water, or diet soda is going to be the choice.
Which is the same as doing absolutely nothing. So, listen, if you support this bill, it was introduced by Senator Tom Harkin of Iowa, and it would require the Department of Agriculture to update its definition of foods of minimal nutritional value, and that's really good for us and our children. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Our guest today is Erica Reynaud. She's an organic farmer and researcher. She's the research and farm manager for Seeds of Change, an organization dedicated to preserving biodiversity on the planet by seeking out and distributing traditional open-pollinated, organically grown heirloom and traditional vegetable, flower, and herb seeds. Now I sound like a real geek, but Erica, will you just explain to them that big introduction and what the heck is open-pollinated, organically grown heirloom stuff and why is it important?
Okay. Well, definitely the differentiation between heirloom and traditional is one of our biggest questions. Heirloom varieties are varieties that were brought over by new immigrants, most commonly at the turn of the century, and that they've brought over and saved and adapted to our local agricultural and climatic areas in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Traditional varieties, how that differentiates is those are preserved varieties of native peoples and traditional peoples of the Americas.
Huh.
And so that, in that regard, we consider ourselves keepers or preservers of biodiversity in that we're trying to keep really diverse varieties in the agricultural and gardening communities of North America.
So I guess the big question I have for you, Erica, is why would the name of your organization then be called Seeds of Change, since isn't that the way things are going right now? Isn't that what we're doing? Isn't that what the way we farm in this in the country and in the world now?
Oh, well, that's a great statement. I would say maybe we're getting back to that and we're recognizing that, but the reason why Seeds of Change originated in the first place, in 1989, Seeds of Change was founded predominantly because since the late 60s and early 70s, the movement towards hybridization and chemical agriculture developed in the United States, and that led us away from preserving our varieties and preserving traditional varieties and orientated us more towards growing and producing varieties that you couldn't keep the seed of.
Well, talk to us more about the chemical agriculture
yeah,
that you started.
Why would we as a country want to go to a sort of farming that you can't keep the seed?
Well, I think part of that was that you had issues around lack of areas of arable land and producible land, and therefore there was an orientation towards trying to produce varieties that produced a higher yield and had more disease resistance so that you could feed a larger population.
Well, you
and
know,
that was beneficial in certain parts of the world. However, at the same time, aspects of really diverse agricultural and gardening systems that included considering birds and insects and soil fertility became less prominent, and we focused more and more on yield and less on biodiversity.
Well, and as we focus less and less on biodiversity, I mean, isn't it true that large corporations can make a lot more money using a monoculture and giving you seeds that now, I think one of the great things that's changed is that we can patent seeds now, and that patent lasts, you know, of genetically modified seeds, for example, lasts through the generations. It's a patenting of the DNA. Is that dangerous for our country that we see more monoculture and patented seeds?
Well, I think definitely we're obviously seeing more and more of that at every level. We're even seeing that in open pollinated seeds in university breeding programs. And so therefore that does limit our ability to save our own seed and regenerate our own seed and preserve our own food systems. So I think that is part of the reason why Seeds of Change is orientating more towards open pollinated and diverse germplasm, because a lot of this is being lost and wrapped up in patents
and
hybridization.
Can you define what open pollinated means?
Well, open pollinated is that it's reproducible, that the seed can be grown out, and if you allow for the appropriate isolation distance, depending on the species, you can then, it reproduces true to itself. So you can grow lettuce, let it go to seed, collect the seed, and plant it yourself the following year, and you'll get a true-to-type, a true-to-form variety, rather than in a lot of hybrid seeds, you can't do that because they've been crossed with inbreds that do not necessarily allow that to be grown out and grown true-to-type.
Well, there is also, is there not a movement to from some of the larger corporations that obviously is not your corporation, but a movement to create sterile seeds, in essence, seeds that will only grow one time and that you can will never reproduce?
No, absolutely. This is how companies are preserving their intellectual property, and they're investing in breeding programs that make sterile seed, and that's partially an intellectual property so that other companies don't steal their germplasm and call them as their own, but it's also to perpetuate their business model.
Since the dawn of time, the way that human beings, or since the dawn of agriculture, which is the beginning of civilization, the way that human beings have grown their food is to that any local farmer, forget about controlling the oil supply. No one controls the food supply. If you're a farmer and you conserve your seed, you can plant again next year, and through hard work, you can make more food. Well, that dynamic is changing in America, ladies and gentlemen, and you may not realize it, but people are actually patenting the type of seeds, trying to make seeds that won't reproduce, and trying to patent some seeds that will, so that even if you use them, you're breaking the law and infringing upon their patent. That's a new thing that's going on with corporate agribusiness. You're trying to concentrate in five or six companies, basically the genetic material of all the seeds for all the food in all the world. Does that sound scary to you? It sounds scary to me. Seeds of Change is working against that. They are at www.seedsofchange.com. Erica Reno from that organization is our guest today. And we're going to be talking more with her in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to Mark and Francis of the Restaurant Guys Radio Show. Our guest today is Erica Reno. She's an organic farmer and researcher. She is with Seeds of Change. Seeds of Change, they distribute and seek out and keep alive biodiversity through keeping all sorts of open-pollinated, organically grown heirloom and traditional type of seeds. We use their seeds a lot with some of the farmers that we work with. There's a sort of a gentleman farmer, a guy named Mike Baker, who's an attorney who wants to be a farmer, and is now, he has a couple of acres that he has locally, and he grows a lot of food in cooperation with us that we use in the restaurant at Stage Left in Catherine Lombardi.
Talk about trading up in lifestyle and down in salary.
Yeah.
Huh?
but we with Mike meet with him, and I think you're seeing this a lot with restaurants, working with farmers from the beginning of the year. And we've 40 different types of products that we've gotten from your seeds. Can you tell us how you work with farmers and restaurants?
Okay, well, Seeds of Change, it's one absolutely and totally integrous component of it is that we buy all of our seed directly from organic farmers in the United States, and everything is produced directly by them. We don't license varieties or contract them from other companies. And we do that specifically because we can really control the quality of the seed from seed to seed. And we can also then continue to support sustainable and organic agriculture at the small and mid-scale. And we also have another program that we have a trialing program throughout the United States with organic farmers who sell directly to chefs, farmers markets, wholesalers, and so forth. And we do that because we want to get their feedback on our varieties, how they perform in the field, what their customers' reaction is to those varieties. And then we also have a program where we take chefs out to the farmers' farms to look at the varieties in the field, have taste testings, and have an interaction so that they can sort of talk to the farmer about what they're looking for their markets, and then the farmer can talk to the chef about what some of the agricultural issues are with growing those crops.
And that communication is so, so important between the farmer and the chef, so that they can provide the products that we're looking for, and at the same time we can communicate to them what we need and how to get that to the table.
With a lot of restaurant professionals out there listening, if you want to have a leg up on your competition, to get involved directly with the farmers is an incredible way to enhance the quality of your food and get yourself some things that other people don't have, and at the same time do a lot of good and make your customers happy. Hey, when we come back, we'll be talking more with Erica Reno from Seeds of Change about how to get great food, starts with great ingredients, and how to get those ingredients in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott, Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Erica Renaud is an organic farmer and researcher. She's our guest today. She's also the research and farm manager for Seeds of Change, an organization dedicated to preserving biodiversity on the planet by seeking out and distributing traditional open-pollinated organically grown seeds, flowers, herbs, vegetables. You can find Seeds of Change at www.seedsofchange.com, and if you garden at home, I suggest you go look them up. It's really cool. We were talking before the break, Erica, about how you work with farmers and restaurateurs that work together, and how it's in all our interest to bring farmers and restaurateurs together. We have a couple of times that we've done over the years where we've worked closely with farmers, both farmers who raise turkeys and farmers who raise tomatoes, where we've worked with the farmer. We talk with them in the beginning of the year, and let me tell you something. As a restaurateur, to sit down with your farmer in January and talk about what you're going to plant that year, very often before the farmer then, a lot of our farmers then go and order the seeds from Seeds of Change for this year and the next year. And you can do things as a restaurateur like, we use a lot of tomatoes. So now the difficult thing about buying from a local farmer is, well, you know, you only get tomatoes, you know, a month and a half a year, mm-hmm. and then they all come in, and then you've got pounds of them, pounds and pounds of them. Well, we work with strawberries and with tomatoes with our farmers to plan the year. In some cases, we've even said, listen, okay, we'll buy the produce of those 400 plants no matter what happens. We'll shoulder some of the risk. Mm-hmm. But you got to keep us informed. And so the farmers will say, listen, I think about 2 weeks we're going to get tomatoes. I think we're a week away. Okay, next Tuesday. And when the tomatoes come in, we'll get 700 pounds of tomatoes, 1,000 pounds of tomatoes, and there'll be tomatoes all over the menu.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll also set up a production kitchen in the back, and we'll can and put up our tomatoes. We were serving in January of this year, our tomato sauce in our Catherine Lombardi, our Italian restaurant, was made with Jersey tomatoes. And our costs were in line. The quality was better. And we got to tell our customers in January that these were Jersey tomatoes from Monroe Township from Indike Farms.
But what really happened was our customers got to tell us.
Yeah.
And that was
yeah,
that was
imagine.
The big difference.
I can imagine.
So, I mean, do you think that restaurants play a big role in keeping in preserving biodiversity and working with farmers like that? You seem to be putting some efforts toward that.
Well, firstly, you deserve accolades for that effort that you're putting out, because I think that is definitely an amazing model for other chefs and restaurants to be looking to really encourage the development of local food systems and honoring their farmers and genetic diversity in their communities.
But we don't need accolades for that. The food's better because we do that.
Yeah, they can pay us in money.
That and your local food systems are
yes.
more sustainable
oh, yes.
because of it, and your customers are definitely getting better quality and more nutritious food.
And tastier. And you know
tastier.
What? And you know what? Here's the thing, Erica. When we talk about what we've found as restaurateurs, our two restaurants, one is on the high end of middle, and the other one's on the high end of high, and as far as prices are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of freedom. And I think one of the great paradigms is how do we get nutritious, good, whole, local food to people who can't spend a lot of money. But, you know, if you could spend a little bit more, or in some cases a lot more, you can really do a lot. And what we've found is if you take, and I say this all the time, if you take one person and you set them on a mission to find the most ecologically correct, sustainable, best for the planet, organically grown stuff by a small farmer, and you want that tomato, you send person A for, and you say to person B, okay, you go find the best tasting tomato we can have in here tonight. They're going to wind up in the same place at the same farm because it's best for the planet and it's also the best to eat.
Erica, what do you propose that people do? And I'm kind of baiting you a little bit because I know the answer to this question. But what do you propose that people do to get better food, to grow things sustainably, to help the planet? What can each of the people listening to the radio show do?
Consumers.
Well, they can garden.
Yeah.
Yeah. And growing your own food is the most enriching experience that you can have, I think, in that you're intimate with what you're growing. You see it from seed to plate, and you can taste and experience that difference. I think you have the wonderful experience of having people like you growing and producing and presenting foods in really interesting ways, but I think it's really valuable for people to have a food growing experience.
Well,
even if it's in a container garden or mm-hmm. in a small community garden, that's really valuable.
Well, it's valuable on a number of levels, too, because one of the reasons that I love, and though I have farmers all over the place planting things specifically for my needs, I always grow some of your tomatoes in my backyard, and I grow some green beans and a bunch of herbs and things like that. But one of the reasons I do that is to try and connect my kids to the food that they eat. And when they watch it grow from a seedling or a seed to a fruited plant and then eat the fruit, there's something very rewarding and very gratifying from that and very educational.
Definitely.
You know, and
I think it's really valuable for, you know, people to be gardening with their children and having that experience, because they'll grow up and they'll be never, not really ever knowing where something came from or what it looks like when it's a seedling versus a plant and when it's mature and when it's ready to pick. And I think for children, that's particularly rewarding.
We're constantly trying to connect to the food, and that's the best, easiest, most rewarding way, I think, to connect to our food.
Well, and also, I live in an apartment in Jersey City, right? So I'm not planting tomatoes on my balcony. You know, that's not going to work, especially with my lifestyle. But I do, I mean, you have some great varieties of basil, and, you know, you can grow some basil in your house, mm-hmm. and you can grow herbs in a window box or even in a box in your kitchen. And to have, you know, those fresh things to just be able to snip and throw in your sauce makes all the difference in the world. It really does. And one of the things that's very interesting, I think, is that what the great chefs realize is they go back to the farm because different kinds, like tomato sauce, well, what kind of tomatoes?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Craig Shelton owns the Ryland Inn here in Jersey. Great restaurant. And I love going in his restaurant because he has an acre and a half kitchen garden, right? Is an acre and a half that what he got? Something like that. And he has a full-time gardener. And in the late summer, I remember he does the tomato tasting, and he'll plant 7 different varieties of tomato, and then you'll get the tomato tasting that his line cook goes out and picks at 4 in the afternoon that you eat at 7 o'clock at night. And all the different tomatoes, they taste very different in and of themselves, and people don't realize that, you know, there is not a grape, there is not a tomato. There are different kinds of tomatoes, and when you go to your local farmer's market or when you plant stuff in your backyard, I think people find it super interesting to plant 2 different types of tomatoes or 2 different types of whatever it is that you're growing, and it's amazing. You don't have to touch it to get that diversity of flavor
and
on the plate.
One of the great reasons to plant a couple of different kinds of tomatoes is just not just for the different taste, but they may arrive at different times. So you can extend your tomato season by having 6-7 different types of tomato plants.
Erica, do you find that most of the people who buy your seeds are farmers? Are they home gardeners? Are they who's buying your seeds? Who's using them? What's the feedback you get?
Well, it's both, and then it's multiple tiers within that. I guess we're predominantly a garden seed business. That's the bigger business, and we've only been a small farmer to mid-sized farmer seed business for 4 years. And we find that more and more the orientation of the garden seed business is more and more urban. And so this has been an interesting thing for us because we started as more of a homesteader, back-to-the-land, alternative lifestyle customer, mm-hmm. and now we're orientated more and more and more to the urban customer, and our questions are more about how to grow, beginner questions, and then a lot of questions around nutrition and organics, and the comments are often around the quality and flavor of heirloom varieties and organic produce.
You know, in urban settings, people are turning more and more, and you read about this occasionally, and I always think it's great, and even a couple of restaurants in New York City have done this, to rooftop gardens. We actually explored the possibility with our new restaurant because we own the building. We have 2 stories and a restaurant on each floor.
But we decided not to collapse our roof on top of our restaurant.
The architect said, no, you can't do that. Are you kidding? But if we had been able to.
As long as you put everything along the joists and the beams.
Yeah, no, we had a building that was built in 1925
and
to support exactly the amount of weight it currently is carrying.
They won't even let me go up there.
The Swiss have a lot of new mediums for urban gardening because they have a policy in that country that for every square foot that you utilize on the ground, you have to recreate that garden space on the roof.
Oh, that's cool. That's really great.
So they're the leaders in creating materials that are lightweight.
Wow. Well, when we come back, we're going to be talking more with Erica Renault from Seeds of Change. You can find out more about Seeds of Change yourself and get your seeds for this summer at www.seedsofchange.com. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:45. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of the Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to restaurantguysradio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hey everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. Our guest today is Erica Reynaud. She is an organic farmer and a research and farm manager for Seeds of Change, and we're talking about how they're working to preserve biodiversity on the planet. You can too, and you should plant something at home, even if it's just some basil in your kitchen. You can get some great certified organic seeds at www.seedsofchange.com. Now, let's talk about organic seeds. Why is that important, Erica? And are all your seeds organic?
All of our seeds are 100% organic. We're the oldest all-organic seed company in the United States and with the most varieties available. And we started as an organic seed company because we felt that it resonated with the mission of preservation of biodiversity was equally and as important as sustainable and organic agriculture. Traditionally, conventional seed is produced with in conventional agricultural systems. It's a highly chemical input system, and it's actually really quite harsh on the environment. And we felt that if you're going to have organic food and organic produce, that it needs to start with the seed, that the seed needs to be produced organically as well as the produce that you ultimately eat. It's a much more closed-loop system.
How are traditional seeds produced that uses so much more energy and so much more inorganic input?
Well,
Let's not call it traditional. Let's call that something else.
Yeah.
Okay, conventional seed?
Yes,
yeah,
thank you.
Conventional seed is produced in a conventional way with synthetic fertilizers and pesticides and herbicides. Seed production requires a lot of herbicides because you really need to keep the weeds under control in order to not have weed seed in the seed material.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of fungicides are used because if you have any fungal pathogens in your seed crop, it can really, you know, it can move from seed to field, seed to field, seed to field, and you don't want to have that. So we really focus on organic methods of fertilization and fungal control.
Well, how do you accomplish that without just kind of putting down the mainstream weed killers and getting it done?
Roundup.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
we accomplish that through several different principles of sustainable agriculture. We practice crop rotation, which helps includes cover crops that smother weeds.
So you don't just keep planting corn and corn and corn and corn and corn and corn until the ground actually dies?
Right. We're trying to ensure that we put some fertility back into the soil. We don't use high nitrogen feeders like corn over and over again. We incorporate vetches and buckwheat and rye and so forth into our rotation. We also intercrop, so we plant some certain species that shade other species or may attract certain beneficials that help create a more diverse environment that helps control pests.
So you're kind of doing it like the way we did it for thousands of years before.
Do you guys remember your high school textbooks and you read about feudalism and crop rotation and all that stuff? Well, you know, we can defeat that by dumping a lot of chemicals in a vineyard. We can defeat it all. I mean, but it comes down to this, and this is really what it is. And I'm so glad you came on the show, Erica, because it seems like this stuff is radical. When this is not what's radical. This is traditional. This is historical. And this is the way it's meant to be. There's a new paradigm. You know, the old paradigm and that comes from Europe is man working with nature and maybe harnessing the forces of nature and riding them. Whereas there's a new paradigm that came about in America post-World War II, which was man against nature, which is kill everything in the field, make it absolutely sterile, and then grow one crop of particularly flavorless tomato that we can ship across country and harvest green. And that's not, we call that conventional, but that's not traditional. Mm-hmm. This is traditional. This is the way man has been doing it for thousands of years. And I got one other myth to dispel. Because the big corporate agribusiness companies will say, we need to do it this way because we're not going to be able to feed the world unless we do. And that's a bunch of garbage, because the first genetically modified crops do not make higher yield. Mm-hmm. They're resistant to Roundup that Monsanto can sell you, so they can sell you Roundup, which is a pesticide. This is the way to feed the planet and to have a planet left to live on that we can eat in. And Seeds of Change is part of that, and it's not groundbreakingly radical. It is traditional. It's the corporate agribusiness that's radical and dangerous.
You know, and as long as we're way up here on this high horse,
amazing we got the horse in the studio.
I might as well jump on in. There are all kinds of things that are cropping up. Okay, people are allergic to things that we never had these kinds of allergies before in our life. Do we know what that's from? No, we don't know what it's from. But can I posit some observations and maybe make some guesses? Is it possible that it's coming from genetically modified organisms? Is it possible that it's coming from all the pesticides that we use in our food supply? Of course these things are possible. But you know what the real answer is? We don't know, yet we just keep taking all these chances and doing all these things to ruin our planet.
And you're in a situation where you don't know what your kids eat. Yes, you know it's an Oreo, but can you read those ingredients? Do you know what those ingredients are? Read the back of a Pop-Tart box. Do you know what those ingredients are? How about we feed our kids, we stop worrying about diets and feed our kids strawberries, apples, oranges, things like you can identify and you know where they come from. And you know where it comes from the seed, and you know what kind of farm it comes from. And I think that's part of what Seeds of Change is really a part of. I mean, do you agree, Erica?
Well, definitely. I think we're really trying to reconnect back to the essence of the earth and interacting with the earth, and I think that people really need to be conscious of what they're consuming, because everything that they're not conscious of, they have to be to understand the interrelationship of that with the planet.
And you know what? Somebody in a big corporation somewhere is trying to slip you something that's the cheapest thing he can slip you and get you to eat. And that's not. And if you don't know what it is you're eating exactly, they can get away with a lot of stuff. Hey, Eric, you guys are doing great work, and I want to thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
We're gonna put a link up to Seeds of Change on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. And I understand you're coming to New Brunswick soon for a conference, and we hope to see you when you're here.
We will definitely be there.
Excellent.
Thank
you.
We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurant. And our guest today was Erica Raynaud. Her organization is Seeds of Change. If you're a home gardener or you want to plant some stuff at home, they're an organic seed food shed, and they supply organic seeds. Very important. That's www.seedsofchange.com.
You know, one of the things I really like about the organization is they are dealing with the home gardener, the home farmer, the small farm, the tiny little farm, but they're also making inroads with some of these huge agri farms, which a few of them are changing the way they do things.
The huge agri farms aren't really, but there are commercial farms of moderate size.
I guess that's what we're saying. And that's happening because of demand. That's happening because when you go to the ShopRite, you go to that tiny little section in the center of the ShopRite that, if you notice, is bigger than it was a year ago. And it's bigger a year ago than it was 2 years ago.
And when you go up to the manager of the store and you say, listen, I want organic milk. I want milk that doesn't contain any added hormones. I want a better organic produce section. Why don't you have, and you go to your supermarket and you say, listen, there's an organic farmer's market right down the block, and then I'm going to go and buy my produce in unless you get better organic produce. You know what's going to happen? It's you that make the change. It's you that create the market for this, because there are barriers to entry, because the supermarket manager, when they get approached by the organic farmer who shows up with, a half a truckload full of beautiful vegetables, says, no, I'm not going to deal with that. I'm not going to change the way, the stuff comes in on the truck and I just put it out and there's an expense to him to changing the way he does business to accommodate that organic farmer.
And extra effort. And if that effort doesn't come with the fact that he's pleasing his customers,
And if you go in and say, listen, I want this, and to the store manager, or you write to the customer service department or whoever and say, listen, I buy organic vegetables. I'm not buying the vegetables here. These aren't very good. You don't have a big enough section. I want more. Guess what? Then they're more open to buying it. Then the local farmers are going to go over more and more to organics, and you will help break down those barriers to entry, and that's what you can do.
And when the supermarkets offer those things and it's 10 cents more for the organic apples than the regular apples, buy the organic apples. It's better for you, better for the planet, and better for your kids.
And they'll taste better, and that's what we're all about in the restaurant business. And, hey, the one last thing we want to say on this is when you go to those two restaurants and they're naming the farms that the produce is coming from, and they're naming the farms that the Gwigstown Quail Farm is where our quail comes from, and the restaurants are buying locally and going to that extra effort to do that and paying that extra money to do that, you need to let the restaurateurs know that you're happy with that as well. Hey, I hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.